We continue this special hour of conversation about what to do with the dozens and dozens of Confederate memorials in Georgia. And we've talked a little bit about sort of the middle path, right? Not just completely destroy them or leave them alone, but leave them standing and give them context. Add more information that might make them less a monument or a tribute to the Confederacy. So would that be useful? We have still with us Emory University political science professor Andrew Gillespie. And now let's bring in two new voices. Anne Marshall teaches civil rights history at Mississippi State University. Hi, Anne.
Hi.
And also with us is Dan Moore. He's the founder of the African American Panoramic Experience Museum in Atlanta. Dan, thanks for being with us as well.
It is my pleasure.
So, Anne, there have been efforts in other states to put context on some of these memorials. Has there not? How has that gone?
Yes. Well, I think it's sort of a mixed bag. It works in some places and it doesn't work in others. Case in point for the latter is in Louisville, Kentucky. There was a big effort several years ago to put up a really nice historical installation called Freedom Park around a Confederate monument that was a really large Confederate monument in the middle of Louisville, and it was also adjacent to the University of Louisville campus. And this installation in Freedom Park had a lot of panels that described the role of African Americans in Louisville history and the role that they played in the Civil War and helping to win the Civil War, as well as the struggles that they faced to attain civil rights. And so I at that point in time thought contextualization was a good idea, sort of watched how, you know, sort of optimistically thinking that this was going to sort of offset, you know, the sort of story of struggle and perseverance and oppression was going to offset this sort of symbol of white power that was standing across the street from it. But really, it didn't satisfy the public. It didn't satisfy the students who went to the University of Louisville and had to look at the monument all the time. It didn't satisfy many of the people who lived in Louisville, and so they continued to put pressure on the city and the university, and ultimately the city and university together removed the monument. And so to me, it's sort of, you know, especially in the face of this renewed use of Confederate symbols by people like Dylann Roof in Charleston and a sort of rallying around the Robert E. Lee statue by white supremacists in Charlottesville sort of underscores that there might be possibilities in terms of historical interpretation involved in contextualization, but that in terms of the public sentiment, it just doesn't always work.
Let's hear a comment from David in Rockport, Georgia. He left us this voicemail.
I like all history, and the Civil War was part of history. I know it was a rough deal, but, you know, just because you have interest in the Civil War don't make you a racist.
And then we have a, in some ways, conflicting view from Baki Muhammad, and he supports removing Confederate monuments.
No self-respecting Jewish person would want to see swastikas and things that represented Nazism, except maybe in a particular place. And we would not expect others who have been through a Holocaust to have to see those relics of remembrance on a daily basis.
So, Dan, your job is to create historical knowledge and context, right? Adding context work?
Well, I don't think it does, in all honesty. I had the pleasure of serving on a panel created by the mayor several months ago, and he came to the conclusion that just contextualizing it doesn't always dignify it. And you still have a situation where somebody has to tell someone else what that actually means. So imagine a young child, black or white, looking at a statue, looking at a monument, and having it read to them certain information that triggers in their mind something totally different or something that is not even accurate about history. And let's face facts. Memorials are made and are erected to memorialize or to glorify or to honor certain individuals or points in history. When you have individuals who have done what some of these individuals have done, it is no honor. It is no honor, actually.
So, plot twist, Andra, when we talk about contextualizing history and preserving history, an interesting study came out from Georgia State, or UGA, I'm getting it wrong, sorry schools, in which we talked about this study in July, in which they found that people who most support displaying Confederate symbols, like the flag or these monuments, are most likely to not have basic knowledge of the Civil War. So here is Spencer Piston talking about that. He's one of the researchers from Boston University.
White people who are more knowledgeable about the Civil War are less supportive on average of Confederate symbols, such as the Confederate battle emblem. We did not expect to find that. We thought it might be the case that there's something to this sort of pride in the history of the South.
How does this political argument go? Is contextualization, at least for politicians who may be worried about backlash from either side, is this sort of the safe option?
Well, I mean, so Spencer Piston is a good colleague of mine, and one of the things about the operationalization of that study, I found the results very interesting, but they asked two questions, and so it's a question of whether or not you get two questions right, and so it's not...
They asked them to name a battle from the Civil War and to say who General Sherman was.
Right. And so, you know, I would argue, and part of my research now is looking at, okay, we ask more questions, sort of like how does that actually correlate with support for Confederate monuments and other types of things. On the other hand, I just think sort of this project is completely neat. What this looks like in terms of public policy is that sometimes certain voices get amplified in public debate. And I think that a lot of the concern pre-Charlottesville in particular was about erasure, that if it came away, then there would be a generation of people who wouldn't know that this stuff happened, because there are often times where people are very hazy about things that happened even 50 years ago. And so some people, would argue that you should keep them up just as a reminder that bad stuff happened. And so, I think part of that is what's going on, and then also dealing with a vocal minority who is well-heeled and then could mobilize other people to do their bidding for them, I think is also another concern.
We're talking about how to contextualize some of the Confederate monuments in Georgia, possibly. You just heard Andrew Gillespie of Emory University. Let's go back to Ann Marshall of Mississippi State. Now, you mentioned a huge Confederate monument in Louisville, and that's interesting, Ann, because Kentucky was not a Confederate state. It was not part of the Confederacy. Why is there a gigantic Confederate monument in the middle of Louisville?
Yes, well, and it's not just Louisville. It's all over the state of Kentucky. There were almost 100 Confederate monuments in a Union state. And I think this really kind of speaks to the sort of rationale for putting the monuments up in the first place. It really underscores this connection to Jim Crow, how the lost cause narrative really dovetails with Jim Crow policies, because Kentucky was a slave state. It wasn't a Union, it wasn't a Confederate state, but it was a slave state. So the same impetus that leads whites to put up Confederate monuments in other parts of the South that did secede also works in Kentucky. So I think we see how the rationale works there.
I mean, and it should be pointed out that there are Confederate monuments all over the place. There was one in Montana that just got taken down. There was one in California, in Hollywood, that just recently got removed. I've been to Indiana to look at Confederate monuments. Didn't get to all of them. Oklahoma is another place where there are a lot of Confederate monuments. And so, you know, part of that is migration patterns. And then there's also a recognition that white supremacist views are not just sort of, you know, an artifact of the South. These views are pervasive around the country.
Yes. Well, I think, too, one of the things that's important to remember that's hard for us to see is that really these monuments are kind of the tip of the iceberg in this effort to rewrite history and rewrite policy. There's so much that we don't see unless we go back and read old newspapers and that kind of thing. But really, they were just the most visible and permanent symbols of this effort by many white people in the South after the war to retell their history in a certain way. And this is just what we see, but there's really so much in terms of making sure, you know, you had the United Daughters of the Confederacy trying to launch these textbook campaigns to make sure that the right version of history gets told. They have groups called Children of the Confederacy, where the children are taught the Confederate Catechism so that they'll remember history the correct way. So this really is you know, these are what we're debating today, but it was really sort of just one piece of the puzzle.
Part of the argument, Dan, and Dan Moore is the founder of Atlanta's African American Panoramic Experience Museum. Part of the argument is that young people, especially today, don't know enough about the Civil War. And research shows us that's actually true. People don't often understand a lot of things about the Civil War. Could these monuments help increase people's knowledge?
Well, I don't think so. I mean, young people don't know much about anything other than tweeting. So when you talk about young people, look at our public school system. We had someone recently who was working with the APEX who had a challenge curriculum because the state of Georgia had a curriculum which says Africans were brought here to help pick cotton, and it skipped from that to Martin Luther King Jr. So if you have that in the history books, how much more can we expect young people to know if the history books don't even tell us anything about history? I'm from the North. I'm from Philadelphia. And I was surprised.
Congratulations on the Super Bowl.
Yes. I was surprised when I came to the South, and on what's now President's Day, it was at that time Lincoln's birthday, which was not honored, of course, in the South. They honored George Washington's birthday, but didn't honor Lincoln's birthday. So when you think about statues and monuments, they carry a lot of weight, because they're large, they're huge monuments made of steel or whatever they're made of, and they loom over a society, so they look almost imposing, and that makes people revere them. And I think someone mentioned about Stone Mountain, and you have these monuments that even with contextualization don't really tell the story that we are supposed or should be telling.
We're also talking, Andra, in the end about a very large expense because there are lots of these statues. And I should mention they don't have a lot of just pure artistic value. Many of them were mass-produced. They look remarkably the same. It's basically the same Confederate soldier leaning against a tree trunk for some reason, I don't know, and holding his rifle in front of him. So when we talk about contextualization, is there even the funding or the will in place among politicians to pay for that?
No. And so some cities are coming up with creative ways to deal with that. So it could be selling parks, to, you know, as they did in Memphis, to private entities that can then shoulder the responsibility of moving those things around. And then once you get past Confederate monuments themselves, it's looking at all the other things. So street names, school names, you know, military installations. I grew up in Richmond, Virginia. So I grew up with, you know, Confederate
surrounded,
monuments
yeah.
all everywhere. And, you know, even today, like my last trip home, next to the last trip home, I saw a Confederate monument I had never paid attention to before and just looked and went, oh, that's a Confederate monument. But it's stuff like Fort Lee. Like, it didn't occur to me that Southern military bases were named after Confederate generals because it was Fort Lee. It wasn't Fort Robert E. Lee in my head until that got pointed out after Charleston. And it was like, oh, I see that all the time, right? And so, I mean, that's, I think, the mindset. And I think on one hand, if you're cognizant of history, it is a reminder of how pervasive racism is in American society. But if you're not, you can be inured to it in ways that could be particularly dangerous. And we've just got to figure out a way to strike that balance.
That is Emory University political science professor Andra Gillespie. She's been with us all hour. Thank you, Andra.
Thank you.
And thank you to Ann Marshall, assistant history professor at Mississippi State University, and Dan Moore, founder of the African American Panoramic Experience Museum in Atlanta. Thanks to both of you.
Pleasure.
Thank you.